You are listening to Wells Tech, episode 633, recorded on Tuesday, July 14th, 2020. Music ministry in a pandemic. Wells Tech is a podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Today on the show, we welcome Kristen Kepsel and Lisa Utek to talk about music ministry in a pandemic and some of the things that they have to account for and be thinking about as they're trying to continue their work as serving as music directors and coordinators in their respective congregations. Lots of interesting insights and some of the things that they're having to do in these very unique times. Sally and I both have picks. We have some great community feedback and a video of the week, as usual. Stay tuned. Welcome back, everybody, to Wells Tech. This is episode 633, and we're recording it on Tuesday, July 14th. 2020, show about technology and ministry and where those two meet. And joining me as usual, the one, the only, Sally Draper. Hello, Sally.
Hello, Martin. Coming to you live from your office at the Center for Mission and Ministry.
Right.
And missing you. You are working from home
office today. Yes. It's okay. Very quiet. I enjoy getting out of the office a little bit more this summer. I think there's fewer distractions, and I think everybody can kind of relate to that. And it's good to kind of get your head down and focus on a task for more than 15 minutes, which is sometimes hard in the office. So
perhaps we'd call that a fringe benefit of a COVID-19 event, and that I've read more and more articles where people across the board in business are realizing that working from home is a very viable option and actually gives you some benefits like you're describing. Mm-hmm. So we might see more and more of that. I wonder if that's the case, at least in our churches. And
I think so.
I know schools got to go face-to-face if that's permissible by law this fall, but
that's a big question, right? Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, the commute is great, and you lived that lifestyle for quite a long time.
Yeah, definitely. 2007 to 2019, that is a long time.
Right, exactly right. So anyway, you brought up COVID-19, of course, and that's kind of our focus this summer. Not that we're focusing on the disease itself, but focusing on maybe we'll call it the opportunities for ministry in its shadow. And I think there are lots of different challenges, almost based on discipline, almost based on what area of responsibilities you have in ministry. Teachers, you can even break that down to different areas of teaching, age groups, subject matter. And clearly there are other concerns across the whole ministry spectrum. So we've been trying to identify people that come across our path that we felt might have some unique perspectives on how they're dealing with the pandemic in their particular area.
Yep, and we're excited to welcome not one, but two interviewees this week, both in the area of worship music. So we have Kristen Kepsel, who serves as music coordinator at Cross of Christ in Boise, Idaho, and Lisa Utek, music director at my congregation, Christ the Lord, Brookfield, Wisconsin. Both of these ladies bring some very exceptional experience to the conversation, and I think it's really interesting to hear the differences and commonalities as well as they have worked through worship music, especially in our distance worship settings.
Joining us on Wells Tech today, not one but two wonderful ladies to talk to us about music. We have Kristen Kepsel, who is music coordinator at Cross of Christ in Boise, Idaho, and Lisa Utek, music director at Christ the Lord, Brookfield, Wisconsin. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you for having
us. Thanks, Sally.
Yeah, maybe you could start out by introducing yourselves a bit to our Wells Tech audience. Tell us who you are and what you do. Maybe Kristen, if you want to go first.
Certainly, thanks. As you said, my name is Kristen Kepsel. As music coordinator here at Cross of Christ, I've been serving almost 8 years here in Boise, Idaho now. When I first arrived, my call involved the music ministry, certainly, but also elementary level youth ministry. And about 18 months ago, the kids ministry part shifted to our Christian education pastor, and now I'm doing music as usual, but also church administration. I was at St. Andrew in Middleton, Wisconsin, near Madison, for 9 years before that. I'm single, no kids. I have three nephews and one niece, all under the age of four. Unfortunately, they don't live near me, so we rely on FaceTime and video chats like many people these days.
Yay, technology.
I'm very thankful for that. I'm very thankful for that.
All right. Yeah. Well, thank you. How about you, Lisa?
Well, I am currently serving at Christ the Lord in Brookfield, Wisconsin. My current call encompasses pretty much anything musical on our campus, I guess you would say. I do the church music planning and coordinating, as Kristen does, but I also have the added side of working with the students of our school and teaching their music grades 1 through 8. And anytime they sing for church, those kinds of things, the adult choir, working with our organist, those typical things that most coordinators are usually handling. In the school side, I also get to do the spring productions and musicals and any special programs like Veterans Day, things like that. I've probably been here, I think it's a total of about 5 years now, being full-time for just over three or so. Before we moved to the Milwaukee area, I served in Manitowoc, Wisconsin. I was assigned to Bethany Lutheran Church, and I taught there for 3 years, where I met my husband, principal's son. Funny how God plans things. And so I taught there and did the music also for 3 years. I resigned to start a voice studio and teach private lessons while we had children that were young. And then also served in Manitowoc at Grace Lutheran Church as their music coordinator for a couple of years.
Busy lady.
Very good. We're really excited to have both of you on. You have unique backgrounds. And one of the things we're doing this summer is talking about how, of course, the pandemic is affecting ministry. And one of those areas that we really haven't explored a lot is the area of music or music ministry. So you two presented yourselves, and this is a great opportunity to kind of get your perspective on how things have changed over the past 3 to 4 months, you know, with the different approaches and restrictions and maybe opportunities and challenges that are present in your music ministry that weren't there before. So maybe, Kristen, you can start. Tell us a little bit about how things have changed for you in your ministry for church or school in that music ministry area.
Yeah, our last in-person worship service was on March 15th. So since then, we've done basically no live music. I know many churches have been able to still utilize their musicians and record or live stream their own musicians doing worship music for digital worship. We were on the verge of recording and distributing parts of our services in terms of the technology that we had set up. So the pandemic took us through the end of that process real quick. But we're not set up to record or stream our live music. And so instead of scrambling and trying to quick make that work, we decided to simply use digital resources that are already available. So while we were recording our pastor was preaching, they developed a shorter order of service generally, so that our digital worship the last couple of months has been, I suppose, more what you'd call a devotional format rather than a full normal service, what you'd see on a Sunday morning, what you'd participate on a Sunday morning. But we have offered alongside of that recording, again, digital worship music resources that are already available, such as lyric videos from Koine Worship Media. Branches Band started producing and sharing lyric videos of some of their hymn arrangements. Keith and Kristen Getty made available, without licensing restrictions, much of their lyric video catalog. So those have been some of our primary sources so that people can include those songs, that part of worship in their home worship, however they choose. But no live music, no choir practices, no band rehearsals. We have returned to live worship. Our first service back was May 24th. Since Idaho has been less affected than many other areas of the state, and so we've been returned with certain restrictions. Right now, while we are including music in our worship services, we are not using any groups or many musicians other than the worship accompanist, mostly myself and our other pianists, keeping it pretty simple right now.
Interesting. Lisa, I had a front row seat for Christ the Lord, and so maybe you can share a little bit about what you've done there.
Yeah, sure. Our services kind of came to a screeching halt for just a temporary period around the same time as Kristen alluded to. Of course, just in time for Easter and all that lovely planning we were looking forward to, our Easter music and our brass group. Obviously, that didn't happen. But pretty quickly after, our approach was to try to do our best to keep everything as, you know, quote unquote, normal as possible for worship. Similar to Kristen, we were kind of right at the beginning of doing some changes with our live stream. We were already set up for live streaming our services, but what we were offering was, I don't want to say secondary, but it was basically just a live recording of what we were doing. It wasn't really designed intentionally to accommodate the worshipers from home like we would hope to do now. So we did add some equipment, an extra camera, a switcher so that we could go between a PowerPoint or lyric presentation or song melodies and such on the screen for the worshipers at home. And we have a very talented man, Tim Snyder, who is such a servant and is willing to do a lot of that work for us. So that was a tremendous blessing that sort of made it, I mean, fairly seamless in a way. At the beginning, my first service at CTL was actually serving musically as a soloist and then as organist. So for some of the earlier services, I was able to put together, you know, and sing some solos and things like that. And then as we went on, we do still make use of our musicians in just a more limited capacity, obviously not large groups or bands or choirs. If we do use, you know, more than one singer, a duet or something like that, we space people out as much as we're able, just observant of those types of things.
Yeah, it's been interesting to hear from different people this summer. I don't know if you guys had a chance to listen to last week's interview, but Pastor Gunther and New Ulm talked about how they actually used old worship videos so that when people watched the video, they saw a full congregation and they sang along with the congregation. Well, and then you guys have completely different experiences as well. And all of it.
It's funny that you say that. That's funny that you say that about seeing a full church and having people sing along, because we did have commentaries about how, you know, it's just strugglesome to not be worshiping with your church family, you know, when you would hear the live stream. If you don't have a live congregation to record, we were using people from our staff and putting them around the mics in the back to sort of have congregational support on our hymns, you know, use an organ in an empty church, and it kind of gives this eerie effect. It brings a little sadness to, like, I'm just at home worshiping, you know.
Yeah, and always under that 10-person limit.
Yeah, exactly.
So you just couldn't fill it in as much. So interesting perspective. I've heard a lot about singing in general. Like, some congregations are beginning to meet again, but they aren't doing any congregational singing because there's been, you know, reports about how singing can spread the virus even more so, or things like that. Do you guys have any perspectives on that, whether what kind of direction you're going? Are you doing congregational singing?
Kristen, did you want to answer that first?
Sure. Yes, this has been an interesting question.
Lisa, I'm so glad you went first, Kristen.
I will put it out there. Lisa and I both belong to a Facebook group of Wells musicians, and there was a thread or two or three specifically about this question. As with all research with a brand new virus, there's not a lot of research specifically about the coronavirus and its spread, and we're still learning. Some sources indicate that the spread of the virus has more to do with the heavier droplets that a voice produces, and singing doesn't project those as far, and so it's not a concern. There are, of course, anecdotal instances of church gatherings or choir rehearsals that seemed to be the source of a large spread of the virus, and so honestly, it's not a sure thing. It's not a sure thing, and so congregations do have to simply look at the information that's available as best they can.
Right.
Our congregation, as I said, resumed in-person worship with some limitations at the end of May. And I shared the articles and studies that I had available with my pastors and leadership, and they felt comfortable inviting congregational singing. The first two
Same
worship-
with us.
Our first two worship services, we did have a vocalist singing the songs and simply invited the congregation to sing if they felt comfortable. We didn't require masks. Certainly some people did wear them. Obviously they can if they want to. But it was clear from the congregation's side that they were ready to sing. They wanted to sing. So we've decided not to limit that in any way and go ahead with congregational singing.
And we followed, it sounds like, a similar path to that as well. Our leadership has met many, many times, I'm sure, over the last months and reviewed a lot of the things. And as Kristen said, our people were looking to express that freedom to worship, and we're very much ready to come back. We have a similar experience here where we do have those who choose to wear masks for their own reasons and many that do not. And we do sing as a congregation. We've had to make some modifications, specifically on our communion Sunday. We have adapted how we do communion and precautions in place. But because of the live stream, we don't include that portion on the service. And so there's just been some things we've had to sort of consider from that technological aspect and what you're putting out for the people worshiping along at home.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, I guess from the techie's perspective, I'm always curious, are there any particular tech tools? Kristen, you mentioned a Facebook group, different enhancements to video and things like that. Any tools specific to music ministry that you could recommend for our audience? Lisa, maybe you want to go first?
Oh, sorry. I just saw Kristen.
No, go ahead, Lisa.
Okay. As far as for during this time, I think it is just really dependent on your congregation, what you currently have available, and the needs of your people and what services you're offering. Financial situations are different in every congregation, so you might not be able to go to a full live stream or purchase the equipment necessary to do what we're doing at CTL. But there's certainly ways. I mean, my goodness, I've seen just such creativity from different congregations out of curiosity, seeing what others are doing with, you know, even their phone cameras or Facebook Live or YouTube postings. There's quite a lot of options out there to be able to go into the homes and offer worship, continue to our membership. I can't think of anything specifically tech-wise that has, other than just taking all of my own equipment home to have it available to me.
Very good.
Yes, perhaps Lisa finds herself in a similar situation. I can describe for you what we do in order to produce online worship, but I couldn't tell you exactly what technology we use. That's more the province of our tech guys. I know Lisa mentioned getting a switcher so that you can go between your camera and whatever you're projecting on your screens. That's definitely something that's been very useful because, as she described, if you're simply recording or live streaming the service as it is, how do people participate? Do you, if they can't see the screens on the video, and so integrating the lyrics or the melodies or whatever with the video is certainly a step up from what we had been doing, simply recording the sermon.
Great point.
Right, and we also post our week's bulletin as a link underneath so that people could print or follow along on that on another device or something at home. So that's been really good improvements, ones that we, I'm sure we'll have some meetings to discuss, you know, what's worked well, what's not worked well, what we want to maintain or improve.
Very good. Well, we certainly appreciate your time and all the little tidbits and ideas that came from it. I'm sure many will benefit. I'm going to go look up the Getty's lyric videos right away. That sounds really awesome. So thank you both for taking the time and for providing our music, such an important component of worship, even in these odd days of distance worship and social distancing and all of that. We really appreciate it and I wish you God's blessings on those efforts.
No problem. Sally. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
Thanks to Kristen and Lisa for taking some time out of their schedule. And certainly their kind of transparent sharing of kind of where they're at and where they're headed. And obviously a lot of questions yet in their minds.
Certainly, everyone's still figuring all of this out. I really appreciated the mention of the Getty streaming video. Mm-hmm. I found information about their licensing and things, so we'll throw a link to that in the show notes. I guess for me, Martin, I realized how important music was in worship. On about maybe the third note that we sung in our home as we were watching streamed worship, and we didn't sound like the way we sound when we're in church with a full congregation of people to sing along with and a loud organ to give us that underneath depth and everything. So I think we've all gained an appreciation of worship music, and obviously lots of good ideas to do it well still in challenging circumstances.
Right. So thanks again to Kristen and Lisa for their willingness to do that. That's awesome that they were to sharing those thoughts with us. All right, let's move along in our show, and that brings us to our picks of the week.
And breaking news on my part, Martin, I had a pick all set up and then something else amazing came across my desk. So I decided to give you two picks this week.
We'll let you do that.
Just doubling up a little bit. And they're very different, but just things I thought that were timely and helpful and wanted to make mention of.
Good.
The first came from an article from the Detroit News. It's actually was part of an e-newsletter I receive, and it was featuring a partnership with the University of Michigan promoting exercise for kids while at home. And I thought it was really interesting. This comes out of the department, Kinesiology,
probably.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And nutritional health. And their director is interviewed in a couple of different, in the article and on video on the website and things. But she says exercise for kids isn't just recess time even. It's just the time moving around the classroom and even walking to school and things like that. When kids are staying home, they're missing out on a whole lot of exercise and movement opportunities. So basically, through their website, it's called INPACT, I-N-P-A-C-T. It stands for Interrupting Prolonged Sitting with Activity. They have both a path to follow if you're at home, and then one to follow if you're in school. And all the resources and things, especially a whole lot of great videos, are completely free and available. They've actually teamed up with the Michigan Department of Education and are encouraging schools in Michigan to sign up and make use of these. But I thought they were really well done, and I thought it might be something, especially if we go back to any kind of safer at home mode where students aren't able to get to school this fall, then this might be resources you can make use of. I watched some of their introductory videos, and looks like the kids are having a great time in the classroom, just standing up for stretch and exercise breaks and doing that kind of throughout the day, maybe 5 minutes here and there throughout the day, and getting in some really good exercise activity away from the sitting all the time.
Mm-hmm. Excellent resource. Thanks.
Yeah. And then the second one came from a Make Use Of article. We haven't talked about Make Use Of lately, but wonderful website to follow. They have tips and tricks on all kinds of, especially tech-enhanced hacks for your life, I guess is a good way to say it. This particular article pointed to something called Windows Power Toys. And this is a set of utilities that have been around for a long time, but recently, I guess, made the news because of the Windows 10 version that's becoming more and more robust and has just loads of utilities built into it. So there are things like enhancing the way your CD plays, or getting a better calculator, or Alt-Tab replacement task switcher, things like that, that probably the geeky listeners among Wells Tech listeners would be very interested in exploring. For me, I keep it simple, and I found just a couple that got me really excited. Bulk renaming of files. So if you have a set of files, maybe they're files that came off your digital camera, and you'd like them all to have a certain naming scheme or something. You can do that in bulk. You can say, for all these files, find this phrase and replace it with this phrase in the file name, rather than having to go single file at a time to do those kind of edits. So that's pretty powerful. And then batch resizing of images. Again, very powerful tool if you want to, make all your image sizes consistent, maybe slim them down for including in some electronic communication or whatever it is. You don't have to do one image at a time with some editing software to make it happen. You can use this Windows Power Toys utility, basically right-clicking on image titles or a folder with images will allow you to batch resize them. So check out that and the many other things that are outlined in the article. You have to go over to GitHub to download Microsoft Power Toys. Microsoft shares it there for free. It's open source. So again, the geeky ones in the listening audience maybe want to enhance the tools even further than what, they're being shared with as. So you can do that because they are open source. Martin, have you used Power Toys ever?
Long ago. This is not a new thing, although this is kind of the latest and greatest. They've kind of spiffed things up. But this used to be around 15, I almost want to say 20 years ago. And it was just kind of those little small utilities that Microsoft chose not to kind of put in their product. And they kind of fill these gaps, like you mentioned. You know, those are awesome little, very specific gap fillers that ultimately do some helpful things and works. I have not installed this latest one, but there's others beyond the ones that you mentioned there that that are really useful too, about window resizing and things that Windows kind of does, but this does a little bit better. So yeah, this is a great tool, plus free and promoted by Microsoft too. So this is not just somebody working out of their garage just throwing third this party. Stuff out there. So
yeah. Yeah, the article actually mentions that Power Toys for Windows 95 existed at one point. Yeah. So it does go way back.
Yeah.
And good stuff.
Good, good, good. I'm going to kind of pick up on that theme with my pick. This is also kind of a productivity tool, I'll call it. It's called Auto Hotkey, and it is for Windows. And it is kind of the go-to automation scripting language for Windows. We all remember, you know, we probably don't all remember, but some of us remember batch scripts and those things that you could kind of do to make Windows a little bit more helpful and friendly just for specific tasks. But AutoHotkeys is its own little language. And fairly approachable, I think, even for non-programmers to kind of get the hang of just kind of putting some things together that make life a little bit easier. They build themselves as a free open source scripting language for Windows that allows users to easily create small to complex scripts for all kinds of tasks like form fillers, auto-clicking, macros. Just to give you an example, it does key binding. So you could basically remap a key on your keyboard to do a certain task or a series of keystrokes. I've talked in the past on this show about Text Expander, and they recently went to a more expensive subscription model. So Text Expander, I think, is up to like $50 a year, and I wasn't really happy about that. And it was also, I was noticing, taking up a lot of system resources. So I looked around and said, hey, I don't use a lot of Text Expander features. I just want to do a few things that it does. And one of those is to automate my signature on an email. Now that's built into some applications, but it's not super automated and you can't kind of easily mix and match depending on what kind of signature you want to put. Sometimes it's more of a friendly signature. Sometimes it's the whole tamale, the formal with the Synod logo and the name, address, telephone number, et cetera, et cetera. So I wanted a little bit more flexibility in what signature I used. And this tool allows you to kind of build a quick and easy script that will pull in that information. All I have to type in, and you can use any kind of shortcut you want, but I just have it set so that whenever I type in SIG for your signature and then the space bar, it automatically replaces that text with the full-blown signature that I want. You can enter email addresses. So I have one where I just type in @Wells and it just types in my whole Wells email address. You can do automated form filling, as I mentioned. You can also kind of capture common replies that you have to certain emails. We get a lot of requests for similar things. So what does this Synod do for this? Or what would you recommend for that? So I can plug those into this scripting tool. Plus, there's all kinds of other just kind of more geeky automation things that you can do that make kind of managing Windows a little bit easier, auto-clicking things on certain pages. So, for instance, one of the ones that I really like is because I change from external monitor to external monitor sometimes, and they're different sizes. You'll open up your computer on a different monitor, and some of the windows are kind of half off the screen. They kind of remember where they were on the old screen, so you only have like a little bit of a corner, and you can sometimes not even grab it. So there's a script here that if you just hit the beloved caps lock key and the left click button, you can click anywhere in the window and drag it. Normally, you have to click up in the bar at the top. And if you can't quite find a sliver of the bar to grab because it's slid off to the right side, you can just get any part of the window with your caps lock and the left mouse click and drag it back in. So it allows you to do things like that. And there's a huge community of people who've developed scripts. You don't actually have to write any of these if you don't want. You can probably find any kind of auto hotkey script that you like that'll do similar things to what you're trying to automate. Just a huge community, very geeky, of course, but they love their hot scripts and their hotkey scripts, and they share them. It's totally open source and just kind of a neat find. I was really surprised, and maybe way back in the day I had seen this and tried it and put it down, but just finding this and for free an open source product that works really well. It just kind of runs in the background. You write your scripts right in Notepad or any text editor. Just kind of a cool tool that if somebody's looking for some kind of automation, window resizing or dragging or key binding or any of those kinds of things, definitely something to check out.
All right, so I've lived the whole window off the side of the screen thing, just like you described. And my heart was just going a flutter. I think this is like Geeks R Us kind of confessionals today. We haven't been geeky on Wells Tech in a long time.
It is.
So.
Yep.
Good stuff.
I knew I wasn't the only one that had that problem. But yeah, and plus you get to use a key on your keyboard that you use for nothing else. I don't know if, Sally, maybe you have a special use for your caps lock, but I'm hard-pressed to figure out what mine is.
Yeah.
So it's found some usefulness now. So.
Yeah, except hitting it accidentally. And
exactly.
Being very frustrating.
There are even operating systems now even warn you that you've done this. So that should tell you something that maybe shouldn't be there. So, and it's so big usually. It's not just this tiny key off to the left. It's as big as your Enter key. So I don't know. Anyway, so that's my pick of the week. All right, should we move on?
I think it's time for community feedback. And I will say our Google group, our Wells Tech Google group, has been a busy place. If you aren't familiar, you can go out and join the fun on our Wells Tech Google group. We'll have a link in the show notes. And it's basically a way to send an email to a group of techies who are living the ministry technology life just like you and get great responses. So there were a couple of interesting questions that came across in the Google group that got a lot of feedback. The first was from Kathy Weigold, and she says they're considering moving from shared desktop computers to assigned Chromebooks, and she was looking for bulk used or refurbished Chromebooks and asking advice along those lines. And overwhelmingly, the advice was don't go there. The machines are just not built
not made
for being refurbished.
Yep.
they're kind of used up by the time someone's put their hands on the Chromebook for any even a short length of time. They are meant for just a one user kind of scenario or one school or whatever. So it wouldn't really be cost conscious to kind of go that way. But if you'd like to learn more and hear from the different people's experiences, one thing that came out in the discussion was as you're planning and pricing for this, remember that there's licensing around it. So you really want to get the Chrome management license, which I think runs like $25 to $30 a year. And I might be wrong about that. But that would allow you to manage the Chrome books within your domain, your Google Apps domain, so you can put policies on student Chromebooks and things like that. So good discussion on that topic. And then secondly, someone, let's see, I want to say it was Ben Polzine, who asked a question about the pre-K through 8 school would like to start using a platform that allows us to send SMS messages or text messages to students' parents for important announcements and emergencies. And once again, the Google group did not disappoint. There were several responses and lots of different options to choose from, and people seem to have good experience with all of these. So we'll have links in the show notes to Remind, One Call Now, Bright Arrow, and Flock Note, which is church specific, but they thought it might extend to the school as well. So different people chimed in on that. If you want to read more about their experience, check out the link to that message thread that we'll have in the show notes. And then moving along, just a couple of interesting things we've picked up on recently from our Lutheran Schools office, one of which was a pamphlet that was produced by the EdTech resource company Trox. We work with Trox quite a bit for different educational technology deals and special pricing and things for well schools. And Trox has put together a very nice brochure on remote learning must-haves and basically kind of diagrammed out different scenarios like home to home, if the teacher's teaching from home and the student's receiving it from home, versus remote classroom to home. So the teacher's in their classroom videoing a lesson or whatever it may be, and the students are receiving it at home, and others. So blended classroom to classroom. So you're sharing lessons with a different classroom, and then blended classroom to home. So basically kind of draws a diagram of the different equipment that would be in use. And I'm sure that you could work with Trox if you had questions about any of these pieces. But for instance, they mentioned PTZ or I want to say point to zoom cameras. Is that what it's pan tilt zone? That's right. That's what I meant. So if you, you know, like I said, if you have questions on the different cameras or the different equipment that they're recommending, wearable USB microphones or whatever it may be that would help you put together kind of the setup that they've diagrammed, you certainly could get in touch with Trox or other vendors, of course. But this gives you kind of a good starting point to know what the pieces of the puzzle are to do different types of distance learning, basically, or blended learning. So good diagrams. And then lastly, Martin, we wanted to make mention of a webinar that's coming up 1 week from today, next Tuesday, July 21st at 1 p.m. Central. And this is from our Lutheran Schools office, coupled with Christian Family Solutions. And they're partnering to host a webinar for all Wells teachers and leaders, with the focus being preparing for the unique school emotional needs and stresses of our teachers and students in today's context, based on God's promises to be with us in all things. Sounds like a great webinar to participate in, and they do have a registration form. We'll have a link in the show notes to get registered for that so that you can be part of that free webinar. So that wraps up community feedback for this week, Martin. We just have a video segment to share to wrap up the show, and our video segment actually is related to one of my picks of the week. It's a video called Hands-On with Power Toys for Windows 10. So they kind of walk you through all the different utilities that make up the Windows 10 Power Toys. So see it in its glory in this video. Check it out on our show notes page.
And that will about do it for show 633, episode 633. So glad you were able to join us, and hopefully we provided some things that are going to be helpful to your ministry. Again, thank you to our guests, and thank you, Sally, for all that you do to make this show possible. In a couple weeks, we're going to be back at it again. We'll be back at the Wells Tech table, and another interview, a Wells member who's invented, so to speak, something that might be very helpful in this pandemic that we have, and getting people back into our facilities. So you, hopefully that was a good enough tease, and you will join us again. Again, thanks for joining us. Have a great week, and blessings on your work and ministry. Bye-bye.